Welcome to the PreparedX podcast, your complete source for crisis, emergency, business continuity, and security preparedness interviews, news, and much more. Now, your host, he creates chaos for a living, Rob Burton.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 16 of the PreparedX podcast. In this podcast, I interview Luke Benzie. He is the Managing Director of Security Management International, or SMI. We spoke about why organizations, whether you're a small organization or whether you're a multinational organization, why you should understand the threats that may impact your employees while they're traveling. And so we looked at both physical threats as well as cyber and digital threats that are impacting travelers now in various parts of the world. We got into a lot of great information, quite a bit of detail here. So whether you're actually a business traveler or whether you travel for pleasure, you get a lot out of this. So anyway, here's the podcast. Good morning, Luke. How are you doing today?
Hey, very good, Rob.
For our audience, Luke, just before we get going, could you spend a few moments just telling the audience a little bit about yourself, your career, and your current role as the Managing Director of Security Management International?
No, absolutely. So as you mentioned, I do run the firm Security Management International, SMI. We're based in the Washington, D.C. area. We're a global security consulting firm. Probably 80% of our time is spent helping clients outside of the United States or doing work over there. We've been active now with SMI for about 6 years. Prior to that, I was with Raytheon. I was in their intelligence and information division, primarily doing international business development in Latin America and in the Middle East. Prior to that, I was with the State Department. I was on their foreign emergency support team, basically responding to breaking incidents, terrorist incidents that would happen overseas. We'd have to get out to Andrews and fly out with a team to immediately respond within 24 hours. Did that for several years, and basically have worked with the defense contracting industry, the intelligence community, the DOD throughout Washington now for about almost 20 years. So. A lot of experience in the global security arena. Actually, been to 137 countries now. So
nice.
Spending a lot of time outside of the U.S. Unfortunately, I would actually prefer just to be home, but it doesn't seem the security has always taken us elsewhere.
Right. Well, the fact that you're keeping track is pretty impressive. So, 137.
I've got the map with the pins.
The map with the pins. Yeah, that's a classic. Good one. Yeah. So because of your international travel and because of your work in the security business, you have been exposed to a variety of different environments that pose various threats to individuals while they travel. So I'd like to talk a little bit about travel safety, travel security from an employee standpoint, and that could be a government employee, it could be a corporation that has to send their employees overseas. Could you just talk for a little while about the importance of an organization understanding the physical threats that may pose their travelers when they're overseas?
Sure, absolutely. It's kind of funny. I mean, in the last, I would say, 20, 25 years, you've really started to see a shift in the physical threats that are to corporate business travelers. It used to be that it was only you either were a diplomat, you were a military personnel, or maybe you were you're in the oil industry.
Yep.
And those were the individuals who were really targeted, let's say, for any kind of physical harm overseas. That might be a kidnapping for ransom type scenario. However, what we've seen now, since the world's really become a lot more global or flatter or whatever term you want to use, you're starting to see everyday people now having to get on airplanes and going to parts of the world that, maybe they didn't even know that country existed,
right.
Maybe a year ago before their boss sent them. So what you're starting to see is you're getting a lot of travelers, and I'll admit Americans are big offenders, who are very naive.
Yep.
When they travel, they don't understand the global culture. They maybe have never been to a third world country before and don't understand the threat. So when you're getting individuals like this, who don't have the experience that may come from working in the oil industry or in the government or military service, whatever it is, they actually pose themselves as a bigger target. And for that reason, the bad guys on the other end see them as much easier to target and easier to get away with any kind of criminal act. And you know, talking about the kidnap and ransom, it used to be, you know, if you went to Colombia, you know, the yep. old example of yep. Colombia or Brazil, you'd get kidnapped and you'd be held for, you know, months on end until an employer or somebody paid the ransom or a family paid.
Yep.
Now what you're finding is the express kidnapping, where a person gets kidnapped very quickly, they get taken to an ATM, they empty the ATM cards, and then they drop the person off somewhere, you know, in the countryside or up in a favela in a shanty town,
yep.
and make them walk home. And that's more prevalent. It's quicker. It's more, you know, convenient for the
yep.
Adversary. For bad guy.
Yep.
So
yep.
yeah, you're starting to see more of that, those quick lightning type or express criminal activities, as opposed to the more thought out types of, you know, pre-operational surveillance. Let's go after this particular diplomat with a long planning period ahead of time. Now it just happens immediately, which actually increases the danger to the everyday traveler who is not prepared
right.
for these type of events.
Yes, let's talk a little bit about those adversaries, and you know, maybe an attack that you know, the older fashioned attack where there's more of a planning process. Can you talk about what the adversary goes through in terms of the pre-attack planning considerations that they may make prior to, you know, going through, and whether it's a kidnap or whether it's some other kind of attack, you know, what are those, you know, do you see some common pre-attack planning considerations that they make?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, everything pretty much starts, I mean, whether the bad guys, the perpetrators, they know they're doing it or not, they actually kind of follow the same sort of planning that, you know, military personnel might follow. They start with a target selection. They figure out, you know, they kind of spot who are they going to go after. They will then start doing some basic reconnaissance or surveillance against that person. The majority of the time, if someone is going to be ambushed, kidnapped, mugged, whatever it is, and someone is going to do surveillance against them, it usually happens in the morning when they're leaving their house, because choke points can be, you know, discovered along their routes to work or wherever they may be going. So we see a lot of surveillance there in those kind of choke point areas, a person leaving their home at a certain time of day,
yep.
very predictable routines. From there, what we may also find is some of the perpetrators may be doing a rehearsal. So they may be doing some dry run scenarios.
Yep.
In their planning phase, they might also be planning the acquisition of, if they're going to use any kind of weapons in the attack, the procurement of these weapons, how they go about getting them. And then they might be even looking what their escape plans are, such as, you know, buying their tickets to get out of the country, or bus tickets, whatever it is, some kind of exfiltration plan. Ahead of time. So there's a whole logistics phase that would go into it as well. And if it is going to be something that, let's say it's a kidnapping, or, you know, let's say it's just a flat out attack, there's also going to be a propaganda phase that goes on with it as well, for claiming the attack or whatever it is as well, and how they're going to get it out. I think what you're starting to see on all levels, whether it's criminal, terrorism, what have you, gang related, you're starting to see these groups getting very strong at social media,
right?
With being able to put out, you know, videos or podcasts for recruiting, for propaganda, whatever it is, or for getting their message out to family members after something has happened, or to an organization. It's really, it's both impressive and scary what technology has allowed us to do from a criminal aspect
right.
as well.
Yeah, for sure. We see that all the time in our space, the crisis management space. The impact of social media is ever expanding, and trying to keep up with that trend, it can be quite challenging. Could you just think of a recent case, whereby some of these planning methods were used by an adversary against either a business traveler or some kind of government employee? And again, whether that's a physical event that happened or whether it's some kind of technical attack or theft of data or some other kind of laptop or anything else. Are there any recent cases that you can think of where these methods were used?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, in fact, there's numerous cases that happen all the time. And we see it all the time with our company. We're always getting called because something's been stolen, or somebody's done something embarrassing, or they've been blackmailed. And just what seems to be the common theme that we're seeing now is people who are being targeted via their social media profiles,
right,
such as LinkedIn or Facebook, something like that. A lot of, again, naive travelers will post something saying, "Hey, I'm traveling to China to attend this business conference. Yeah. I'd like to connect with anybody who might be out there." And what you will see is there are people trolling the internet who are both, they might work for a foreign intelligence service. They might be previously employed by a foreign intelligence
right.
service, or they just may be criminals who say, "Wow, this naive person is posting his travel plans, where he's going to be staying. Let me connect with him with a dummy email address or a dummy profile of my own." And a lot of times it may be a male who's posting a picture of a beautiful woman on there saying, "Oh, I'll be attending that conference.
Right.
I'd love to meet with you."
Yeah.
And then, set the poor guy or gal up for some kind of, what we'd call the old honeypot.
Honeypot, yeah.
Or may just elicit the person. Maybe they meet at the conference, or maybe they even, book travel with them. Now there's many airlines where you can actually pick via your LinkedIn or Facebook page who you want to sit with on a particular flight.
Right.
You have the option of posting your seat before a flight, and people can go through, see profiles, make a match, and you can fly 8 hours over the Atlantic with somebody ahead of time and plan who that is and what you're going to talk about. So this actually bodes well for people who are looking to elicit information or strike up a phony conversation or get close to somebody with the idea that they may steal their intellectual property. They may recruit them to do some kind of nefarious act, maybe an espionage act. Or it could be they want to get close to them to maybe abduct them or some other type
sure.
of scenario. So it happens almost on a daily basis now. So again, you talk about the positive and negatives of social media.
Some of the larger multinational organizations, as well as even actually some mid-sized businesses, may have budgets. Some have budgets or in-house expertise where they can help their employees to prepare for various travel to foreign environments. In your experience, what have you seen as some of those tools and techniques that have been used to help employees become better prepared prior to their journey?
Yeah, so we're starting to see a lot of this. We're getting a lot of requests. It's funny. It used to be, a lot of NGOs would come to us and they'd say, "Hey, we've got these kids right out of school who've never really been anywhere. And now suddenly they're going to go to a third world country or a place that might even be considered a hostile war zone."
Yep.
And they don't have any military or any kind of background training. So we would provide them with a very quick, basically an introduction to the basics of, situational awareness, the basics of maybe, surveillance or surveillance detection principles, things like that, and basic medical courses, because there's a lot of places that you'll go in the world. And if you break your leg, you don't want to go to the local hospital.
Right.
You may need to know how to set it yourself until you can get on a plane and go to a safer country.
Sure.
So we used to see that heavily in the NGOs. Now we're starting to see it again in any kind of business. And it could even be things, what people forget the number one cause of death and accidents or serious injury overseas is traffic accidents.
Right.
You know, you go to a lot of these third world countries, there is no driver's ed program or, right. or driver's license test that you need to pass. You know, I mean, if you've driven in Africa or, you know, some other, and I don't mean to pick on Africa, I mean, but there's a lot of places you go where nobody really has ever learned to drive, and it's the biggest car on the road wins, and there's no speed limits, and there's a lot of potholes, and that still is the number one cause of death of Americans overseas.
I remember landing in Kabul for the first time, and then I came out of the airport, no security at that time, and there's a guy holding my name, which was spelled wrong, but I kind of guessed that he was my guy. So I got in the car with him, and I experienced Afghanistan traffic and Kabul traffic for the first time, and it was like the old bumper cars at the fair, you know, just ramming into each other. It was whoever was the most aggressive seemed to get through. So I can certainly concur with your comments there.
Yeah, and I've driven in Kabul as well, and it's the thing that if you you bump into somebody, you're not stopping and getting out and exchanging insurance cards.
Nothing
like that either.
No. You're going to keep going. I'd like to get into the protection of data and, you know, the whole espionage side of travel, because, you know, it's certainly an area that the typical everyday traveler is not, you know, fully conversant with in terms of what the threats are. You know, these threats, you can't see them, right? So when you walk into a hotel lobby, I know that's a fairly classic one at the moment, where you think you're accessing the hotel lobby Wi-Fi. Well, in actual fact, it's actually being masked, and somebody else has set that Wi-Fi hub up to steal your data if you log into it. So I know there are a number of tactics like that. So could you talk for a few minutes about the whole data side and the espionage side as it relates to the digital environment?
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, you know, this is sort of more of our bread and butter type of business in what we do. It's funny, the FBI says that behind terrorism, the number one threat to the United States is the theft of intellectual property. And when I wrote Among Enemies, which I think came out in 2012, 13, something like that.
Yep.
At the time, the amount of intellectual property that was stolen every year from Americans was $300 billion worth of intellectual property stolen. The recent number that I've seen goes up to as high as $700 billion, and some people will even say it's $1 trillion per year that is being stolen. And when we talk about this, we're talking about you know, research and design for the latest technology that's being stolen. We're talking about patents that are being stolen. Competitive proposal bids, where somebody finds out what their competitor's bidding, goes in and undercuts that price, and then they never realize that someone saw their number to begin with, and
right.
they're undercutting them. So all of those things are very, very prevalent now, and it's just now starting to come out. You know, what a tremendous problem this is. Now, other countries have recognized that corporate espionage, economic and industrial espionage, has been going on for years. Again, Americans have been very slow to catch on to this trend. We can't believe that someone would do something like this. But the example that you gave, you're right on point. Spoofing a hotel Wi-Fi, we actually get paid by clients who will come to us and say, hey, do a penetration test, a pen
yep.
test against our company and see if you can steal our secrets. We're working on a new formula. See if you can red team it and steal our stuff. And one of the things that we do is we'll find out where their salesmen, their engineers, maybe they're going to a conference. We'll book a hotel room right next to them. We'll spoof in the next room. We'll boost a stronger Wi-Fi signal and say, you know, hey, free Wi-Fi. The person clicks on that thinking they're getting free hotel Wi-Fi, and really, you know, we're just reading all of their emails as they're going through it, you know, or we're seeing them surf porn and then can come back with an anonymous email back saying, hey, I'm monitoring your emails right now.
Right.
Unless you want me to send
yep.
this to your wife, you know, give us the contents of XYZ formula, whatever it is. So, it's very, very easy to do. I really don't think people understand how easy it is and how often it actually happens. And, you know, the Fortune 500s are starting to catch on. But I think what people miss also is that people in a smaller company may say, oh, well, our company only has 20 employees. Why would anybody target us? Where what they fail to realize is, though, they may be a subcontractor to a larger, you know, company. It's kind of funny. I mean, living in the Washington, D.C. area, we have all the Beltway bandits, you know, all these multi-billion-dollar defense contractors. Well, all those defense contractors have pretty good security, but they all usually have dozens and dozens of subcontractors underneath them, which are smaller mom and pop shops. And if I'm a bad guy, I'm targeting those guys because it's easier to get in through their Wi-Fi than it is to get through, you know, one of the big guys. So that seems to be the trend now, is going after the smaller and mid-sized companies.
Right. Yeah. And that the classic one of the hotel lobby happened to a friend of mine recently, or he certainly thought that's where it may have occurred. And they happened to apparently get some videos off his machine, and they were trying to bribe him. And he obviously informed the FBI as well as whoever else he needed to inform, his employer. He didn't bow down to them in terms of information. But he obviously at that point had to sweep his machine totally clean. And I also mentioned to him, I said, you know, look, you know, you're very active on social media. So for them to actually know where you were at any one time may not be that difficult because of all the various channels that you're posting on. I said, so that could have been certainly a start point for them. they may not have even had information from your laptop. They may have made that up. But certainly they would have known where you were and what you were doing, because he was traveling over to Ireland at the time. I think he was in Dublin when he thought this had occurred. So, but it wasn't difficult for anyone to see where he was traveling. And, you know, again, he could have, you know, they may have not had access to any of his information on his machine, but they may have used that as a tactic to try and get several thousand dollars out of him. Anyway, he didn't pay it. And he didn't think that anything on his machine was worthy of paying anything. So he was able to obviously not get bribed. So, but these stories are really important for travelers to understand how easy it is for people to get a hold of that information and use it against you.
Yeah, and a lot of times when you are overseas, you don't have the protections that you may have in your home country. I'll give you a perfect example is, I was in Morocco and I went out to dinner. I was only gone for 90 minutes and I came back and my hotel room, had been broken into. The room was trashed. All my electronics were stolen. I had things in the safe. They even got in the safe, all of these types of things.
Yep.
They called the local police. They came and they basically did nothing. The hotel did nothing, and I was thinking, my God, if this was New York City or something, I'd have the FBI down here.
Yeah.
All this
right.
And no, it's just not the case at all. I mean, a lot of times you are on an island. Even if you want to go to the embassy or something, there's not much they can do.
Nope.
So you almost have to carry your stuff with you, at all times, or be very discreet, or, you know, we always recommend people take a throwaway cell phones. I have a separate travel laptop that if someone was to steal my laptop, you know, they're not getting all my emails and all my saved documents.
Just the presentations that you're there to give. Yeah. I mean,
absolutely. I mean, it's going to happen. People don't realize you go down to the gym in the morning to go exercise and you leave your laptop on your table or your desk in your room. It doesn't take that long for someone to get in your room, pop in a cloning device and download everything on your hard drive.
Yep.
Just a few minutes.
Sure. Sure. There seems to be instability in many parts of the world at the moment. And, you know, when isn't there, right? I mean, it seems to be every day you turn on the television and there's something else going on wherever it may be in the world. When trying to watch over a global workforce, what are some of the most challenging environments that you're seeing right now for employees to travel to. You know, obviously there are some that are, you know, high threat areas where, you know, you wouldn't recommend anybody to go to. But, you know, what are some of the other places right now that you're seeing that maybe are not making the news, but are certainly areas that are very difficult to travel to and operate in?
Well, I mean, you got to look at it for different categories. I mean, obviously Brazil is so hot in the news right now with the Zika virus and everything that's going on down there, and the instability with their government and their currency. So obviously that's a big one that's going on in the news. But there are so many other places that really don't get the attention. I mean, I just one that I'm thinking off that right now is, you know, places like the Congo. You know, places that people would say, oh my God, why would anybody go there? But there's so much industry.
Yeah, right.
You look
right.
at a place like Angola, you know, a country, again, most people couldn't find it on the map, but it's so important to the world economy for oil.
Yep.
I think people don't quite comprehend where maybe a lot of their goods and natural resources come from. You know, the big thing now in Afghanistan is the Chinese going in there for all the minerals. There are a lot of minerals in Afghanistan if you're willing to get there. And you know, speaking of the Chinese, and you know, if you've been to Africa lately, the thing really surprises you is the Chinese influence that's there. Of just, you know, I don't want to say poaching or pillaging, but they are really ingrained in taking the natural resources of China, or excuse me, of Africa, and taking them back to China. Again, a lot of hot spots in the world that economically are important to people, but places that you would not necessarily think that people would go to for industry. So you're starting to get a lot of, you know, companies that have to go to these strange locations, and they probably don't have the infrastructure of roads, hospitals, things like that. So I think the people who are really making the money right now are the people who have the medevac insurance, you know, the air evacuations, getting people to hospitals and things like that. So it's really endless. Like you said, you know, the world's always in turmoil. I think the statistic is 70% of the world is considered, by definition, in turmoil every single day. So,
right.
You know, kind of take your pick of the country right now.
Right. Yeah. And that's why it's so important to, you know, as an individual, take responsibility of preparing yourself to go there. But certainly as an employer, you also need to make sure that your workforce at least has some of those tools and resources. And that's where I want to finish off in terms of kind of the last piece I'd like to discuss with you, Luke. And that really is, look, you know, small businesses, you know, we're a small business, you have a small business. There are obviously a lot more small businesses than there are large businesses. We still have to travel. I still have to send people away. I go away. You know, there are other small businesses that support the larger businesses or the government, government agencies, nonprofits, as you mentioned earlier on. And quite often, the smaller businesses get forgotten about, and they don't have as many resources at their disposal like the large businesses do. So what kind of you know, resources and tools are available? I know there's information through organizations such as OSAC. You know, there are other things online in terms of information and places that people can go to find out, you know, how to prepare themselves for various environments. What are some of those other either online free tools or other resources that are available to the smaller business traveler?
Well, no, you touched on a really good one there. OSAC, I think, does a phenomenal job of putting up free information for travelers and keeping it up to date. One thing that I always do is when we give our course, I always give away copies of my book, and I'm going to do a shameless promotion right here.
Go ahead.
For our book, Among Enemies, Counter-Espionage for the Business Traveler. You know, a lot of companies right now are trying to give more education to their employees about the threats of traveling, and they hand out, you know, brochures and things like that. But something that I would recommend is go to your local FBI. The FBI actually has a program right now where they will come into your business and educate your people for free any of your field offices in any city in the United States will come in and lecture to you about the threats of espionage. So I would encourage people to do that. It's actually the FBI InfraGuard program.
Okay.
Is very good about joining InfraGuard. They will actually do a background check for everybody, allow you to join. It's completely free, but you will have a local FBI special agent who will do monthly meetings to tell you essentially what the greatest threats are. And if you are traveling, they'll also provide you with information about that particular country you might be going to, both physical threats and intellectual property threats.
That's a great resource. I'd never heard of that one. So, thank you. Yeah, I'm sure our listeners will like that one. Well, this has been really informative, Luke. I really, really appreciate your time, and I'm sure our listeners will really get a ton out of this, what is our 16th podcast now. Do you have any final comments for our listeners? And also, how can they get a hold of you if they want to contact you?
Just final thoughts is, you're never alone when you're traveling. There's always somebody watching you, and as we tell people, always assume that you are under some kind of surveillance every time you travel, and just get into that mindset when you're overseas. That we really try to stress as like a number one key to keep people vigilant. And then if people want more information about hostile travel or counter-espionage for business traveler techniques or the book itself, they can contact us at our SMI website, which is smiconsultancy.com.
Okay, that's great. And again, really appreciate your time today, Luke, and have a wonderful weekend.
Thank you very much, Rob. I appreciate it.
Yep. Take care. Bye.
Bye.
That's it for episode 16 of the PreparedX podcast. I do hope you enjoyed this episode. If you did, if you please could just do us a big favor, share it as you normally do, but also you should check out our travel security e-learning course. So if you go to preparedx.net, that's preparedx.net, and then on there you'll find a menu that will take you through to our e-learning courses. We have one for travel security. So as it relates to this podcast and as it relates to this month here at PreparedX, everything was focused around travel security. You'll really enjoy that course. So go to preparedx.net, check out that course, and you'll find that very useful for yourself and your staff. Until next time, I hope you have a safe and enjoyable day wherever you are. Thank you.